And I'm speaking with Anthony Viola, and here's a question for you. How do you think coming here as a 7-year-old and starting life all over again and having to learn a new language and everything, how do you think that affected you in your personality, in the way you approach things or how you think about things, or how do you think it made a difference in like the person you are?
Well, you're saying as a 7-year-old?
Well, yeah. Do
When
you think it
I
made a
came,
big
I was
difference?
7 and a half, more or less.
Yeah.
But I had no thoughts of what my personality was when I was in Italy. But when I came into Brooklyn, that's where I believe I got my personality growing up with the other boys and my family. And it was great. Even though it was depression, no, it wasn't depression when I got here, because between 1922 and 1928 or 29, my father had a good job. He was he was a special work. He was doing, and he was working on piecework, and that piecework was that he used to do rabbit skinning, which they had factories, which they take rabbit skins and marinated one way or another, treated, and he used to peel the skin, and then the fur would made fur coats. So, and that was a good job.
So he was able to do that. He only started doing the junk business in the Depression.
No, when he first came to from Italy, he started doing that. Well, we came from Italy in 1922.
Right.
He started doing that back in up in 1927, 28. So
When things started getting bad.
that's when things started getting good with financially, more or less. I think you can't believe it. I think he, from what I heard, I think he was making like $200 or maybe every 2 weeks,
Wow, that
a
was good.
piecework.
Yeah.
And he was good at it, And but when the Depression hit, and the big family come along, that now what he's saying about my personality is I gave my personalities while I was, my young teens. And they weren't. I didn't suffer because I always tried to make. As a matter of fact, I used to be a runner for the bookmakers, picking up the horse bets, and bring it to the bookmaker, and he'd give me. If I brought him $10 worth of bets, he'd give me $5.
Wow.
So that's why I used to hustle, and I didn't suffer that way, and but my personality became as a gambling,
With the pool hall and
pool
the
hall, baseball. Then I started getting the baseball, and I was a good, very good baseball player. I have to say that because I got a tryout with the Brooklyn Dodgers later on. Yeah, the old Brooklyn Dodgers.
Yeah.
And but the gambling affected my tryout.
Oh.
They wanted me to go ahead and sign me up and send me down to the Carolina leagues, the little leagues, and I unfortunately I was lucky that week. I made a lot of money gambling with the horses, and so I said, ah, they don't pay nothing, and this is what affected, and your personality grows with that.
Yeah. Can you say any more about growing up in Brooklyn? Anything else about what Brooklyn was like back in the 20s?
Oh, well, Brooklyn was, well, those were speakeasy days
Oh.
when they had the prohibition was on. And most beer was made at home, and some people used to sell it in there and opened up more or less what you call speakeasies, where young people go gather, girls, and drink beer, dance, music, you know. And but I didn't get into that till I noticed what was going on. I might have been 12 and 13. But then the law would go into those places and raid them, as we used to call it, raiding. And
would it put people in jail?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. They would take them to jail and break up the place.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. They would wreck tables and everything. Just to, you might have seen that in some of the movies, I guess. But anyway, let me see. What I recall it. During those speakeasy days, young, I used to go and hang around with the older guys, old men. They played bocce ball, mm-hmm. or they played amore, the fingers.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, amore. They challenge each other. You throw up. You can throw up to five or none, or you know. And you have to call and come out right number. I say four, you know, that kind of stuff. And they used to play as a team, four guys, one team, four fellows, another team, and then they play for a beer. Okay, and I used to hang around there because they needed someone to go get the beer. And they used to have a pitcher, a metal pitcher. So at the end of the game, they'd say, hey, Tony, all right, go. I knew the house to go to, and they pour like three bottles of beer into the pitcher, all foamy, and I bring it back to the guy, the fellows who played. All right, Tony, you take the first drink. Oh, yeah, I take the first drink out of the pitcher, all foam.
Well, now, would you go to a speakeasy to get it? Or was that not speakeasy days?
Well, the speakeasies were more or less the places that served liquor.
Oh.
Whiskey. No, this homebrew joint means beer.
Okay.
So, but later on I went to speakeasies and drank whiskeys.
Uh-huh. Wow. Boy, you had a colorful growing up.
Well, in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's, then, of course, remember when 1933, when Prohibition was abolished, now it was legal to have bars in Brooklyn, or every place else, the whole country. And but Brooklyn was something else because they had the bars opened, and they had free lunch, free food, and that food you could not buy that kind of food today. It was just pure, and it had all kinds of like a big buffet style with the best of everything. Cheeses, salamis, hors d'oeuvres of every kind, and you could help yourself. And all you had to do was buy a 10-cent glass of beer. Well, anyway, so us fellas, we used to, young guys at that time, now, 1933, you know, I'm...
18
years old.
Yeah.
So... we go and we put 50 cents apiece. We go to the bar and we have 10 beers. 10 fellas with 50 cents apiece, we make a round. But we eat. And that's what's good about it. When you drink, you eat, don't affect you. And But we used to have places known by what they served, specialties. Pig's Feet Schaefer's. They served Schaefer beer, but they served a big hog head cooked in with cabbage and sauerkraut and all the best bread you could see, and you go up there and slice it with your own with the knife, make your sandwich, mustard, whatever, and
wow.
And you have your beer. Or we have other places where they serve mussels, black mussels.
Huh?
Yeah, you know, big plates, but there's all you want to eat with the marinara sauce and all, and drink the beer. Other places had their own specialties. Now the state come around and said, uh-oh, the Restaurant Association made a complaint. So now they had a charge for food. Oh. Well, you know what they charged? 2 cents. Well, they had to stay within the law. But that they found out right away that the law didn't want to let them get away with that. Well, anyway, that was what days that we enjoyed.
Yeah.
And women didn't come into our life.
Oh, you hung around
with
the guys.
Only when we had a dance at the clubhouse. They used to have social clubs. We used to have social clubs. Social club means that we used to pay rent, like a clubhouse. Had 2-3 rooms. And we do our cooking in there. And we run dances on New Year's Eve on occasions. But most of my life was spent with sports. I liked baseball, and so therefore I didn't have time for young girls.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
But later on, of course, it's changed.
Well, what do you feel very satisfied about that you've done?
I'm very happy with my life. I am. I don't think I would have changed it. I don't know if I want to go through it again. But I had the best times when I was growing up in Brooklyn. Because my family, even Depression time, as poor as we were, my father always made or borrowed money to make wine, homemade wine, in the basement, which I did help grind the grape, press the juice out, all that kind of thing. And there were festivities in the house. We lived in a 6-family house. And there was only mostly made up of Tories. The name, last name Tory. Well, because the owner, Frank Torrey, who used to be my boss in the sanitation, he was a street cleaner. Remember, he used to have street cleaners in New York,
uh-huh.
You know, with the broom. And when the winter time came, he was the boss of the group they hired in the morning.
To shovel.
To shovel snow.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And luckily, I used to get on his, and he'd say, Goomba. As we call it, Goomba, Tony, you come with me. Boy, I go with him. I found out it was a good deal because he worked in the district of, maybe 5 square blocks. And he knew all the people, being a street cleaner there. Well, we get out there at 7 o'clock in the morning. The first thing you know, he's taking me, he'd tell everybody what they had to do, you know. He said, come with me. He'd take me to one of his neighbors that he knew down the basement, and we have a couple of drinks, shots of whiskey. That kept us warm. And that's how I grew up. I knew how to drink, but I also, thank goodness, I knew how to handle it.
Yeah.
Because every time we went out with the boys, they'd say, give Tony the keys to the car. To drive. They would drink and I'd drive, you know. Mm. But I drank with them, but I could handle it.
Mm.
That's why they call me Lucky.
So do you remember when automobiles started coming in and getting?
Well, automobiles came in long before I got there, I'm sure.
But most people didn't
Nobody had too many cars. Right. No cars available. As a matter of fact, my father was the first one to buy a used car. Because I learned how to drive working with a couple of friends of mine. I grew up growing up with young boys who had a job of checking a cake company delivery wagons. I forgot the name of the company, but the, you know these bread, deliver bread?
Like Dugan's?
But they delivered those, remember those cakes rolled in plastic? And, American Cake Company, let's put it that way.
Okay.
Well, they had charge of, when the drivers come in, to check all they brought in, and then they had the job of loading the trucks for the next day, the vehicles. They weren't trucks, but they were small vehicles. And now my job was to pull them out, back them in. So I learned how to drive. It's tight spaces and whatnot. So when I was 16, I guess, my father bought, he went and bought a car, a Lincoln. And it was a 1927 Lincoln. He bought it, he paid $75 for it. It had wooden spokes. It had the window between the passengers and the driver. It had the seats that you would hook back into the behind the driver and open, and then the back seat. And it had a telephone in the corner. Wow. It was a limousine of the time, and he bought it for $75. It was all aluminum body, the whole car. And he bought it because he liked to go for mushrooming in Long Island, mushroom hunting, which was a big fad in those days for the old fellas. And I was a designated driver because I was the only one that could drive. And I remember taking six or seven of his friends, the old fellas, and he always asked me to bring a friend of mine with me, a young guy, which I did. And we used to go, I'd drive to Long Island with about 2 gallons of wine, food galore, and we used to go out mushroom hunting. And they would take time out to eat and drink and bring home mushrooms. And I drove that car, 9 passengers, 3 in the front, 3 and 3. And I remember one specific incident that I drove the car, Long Island. I got on the first toll road in the United States, and it was a motor parkway in Long Island. It's still there. But
Robert,
of course,
Moses built all those roads.
It cost 25 cents to uh-huh. ride that road. Uh-huh. And it was a road like this, you know, just beveled like that, narrow. And I think it was owned by the Whitneys. And I can remember that now we're on our way home. And I said to my friend, his name was Phil, the others all passing out from drinking wine, you know, the old guys. I said, Phil, I said, let's see how fast this can go. Yeah. Okay. So I stepped. And we had the rotating mileage.
Speedometer?
The speedometer, you know. It went around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he's saying, 65, 66, 67, 68, 69, 70. 71, 72, boom! A tire blew. Oh, wow. Going 72 miles an hour. So I eased the brake, you know. I had good sense of driving. And I eased the brake and pulled. The guys woke up, you know, and all the old guys said, "What happened? What happened?" I said, "Ah, we got a flat tire." And I didn't realize how fast I was going. That I remember that.
Yeah.
So.
Did you go on vacations when you were growing up? Did the family go like to Staten Island or to anywhere?
No. 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 It was no time for vacations. But in the time when after I arrived in Brooklyn from Italy, and I was 9, 10, 11 years old, a social service put us in camps, summer camp. And I remember going, I believe it must have been Yonkers, because Yonkers was a country in those days. So we went to camp, and it was nice, you know, we played ball. I think it was, well, I can't remember, Jack Johnson, the big colored fighter in those days, Jack Johnson, who was, they wouldn't let him go past, you know, he was a strong guy, but they held him back from fighting white guys, you know, in those days. So, but he was at the camp, and he would bet, play with us
baseball,
softball, and then this incident had quite an effect on my life. We were at the waterhole. You know, we're going to go swimming. We got bathing suits, and I'm very apprehensive. I've never been in the water. Uh-huh. And so I'm standing there, and somebody just gave me a shove, made me fall in. I floundered. Oh, I thought I was drowning, you know, of course, but they pulled me out. Well, since then, I would not go in the water to swim, which later on in my lifetime, I run a motel, had a big swimming pool for 20 years. I never swam in it.
So that stuck with you your whole life?
But yes, that affected that situation. Just of course, I have four sons, and they're all good swimmers. As a fact, Tony Jr. still holds a record in Peekskill, fastest time in the 50-yard what do you call it?
Dash?
Fast
no.
swimming.
You know. Whatever, yeah.
No butterfly, no, just swimming. Uh-huh. Yeah. Anyway, but that's where my sons all learned how to do it, using the swim pool, diving board, and the good divers and all.
Here's a picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to see when we get unhooked. So just fill me in with a thumbnail sketch. What happened after you got out of the service? Then what did you do then?
Well, I had promised my wife that we lived in, I got married on the West Coast, and I loved the city of Portland. I thought it was great, beautiful, but it's so different from Brooklyn, naturally. But now I'm matured and I'm raising it now. I've got a family. So I said, you know what? I said, I think we're going to live out here if I get through with the war, you know. And that's what finally happened. After I was brought back from the Army, I lived in Peekskill for I got discharged in 45. And moved up to Peekskill in 46. Meantime, we had stayed with our parents in Brooklyn. And I lived, I got floundering around looking for work, coming out of the service with a family. And I got a two jobs. One, I worked for New York Central Railroad. But that was a job to be taken until we had enough to go ahead and rely on the plans we made to go back out west. And so that's what happened. I did have opportunity at Peekskill. I was offered a job to go partnership, lumberyard. Met a nice Jewish fella who came in, and I started hauling it up from Brooklyn, used lumber. At that time, after the war, there was no fresh lumber. And the used was better than the fresh. Because then I was bringing in loads from down in tenements. There were not schools also down in Manhattan on the east side, the old buildings.
After the war, they were knocking them down?
Yeah, yeah. And they had those oak floorings.
Mm.
You can't believe what beautiful. And 2x4s were 2x4s, you know.
They were really 2x4s. Well, why were they knocking the schools down then?
Well, because they were old, outdated, and they couldn't be useful as schools anymore, because they were just from the early, and they were old, really. So to be modernized, everything, but there were schools, but then mostly were apart, big tenements. Have you heard about those old tenements that they had when the people lived there, you know, which was down and out along the, you know, near Delancey Street and east of that, Bowery area.
They call it the ABCs, the Avenue A, B, and C. In the Lower East Side?
Well, the Lower East Side, yeah.
Uh-huh.
They called them, they had the same names in Bayonne.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, A, B, and C, D. Yeah, and, well, anyway, it was a lucrative starting business, but I had promised. So that's what we did.
So then you went to Portland, Oregon?
Yeah.
And how long did you stay there?
Well, I had diversified jobs, and one of the jobs I got was working for the Portland Traction Company, which meant driving streetcars.
Oh.
I drove streetcars in Portland, and then they changed over to buses. I drove buses, and then we had a catastrophe happen. After 7 years we were married, we lost everything because we had a flood. And I lived in the area where the flood was, called Vanport. And we lost everything we had. The only thing we had was what we were wearing that day. I even lost my bus because I was evacuating people. I made one bus load of people out, brought them out to 4 or 5 miles to the next town, going back in. By that time, everything else was, but in the meantime, I was the last bus to leave the second time, because I told the inspector, I said, hey, we're looking for survivors. It happened to be early in the afternoon. I said, can't see anybody. We better get out of here because the water's filling the area up. So when I got to where we were supposed to go out, to the highway, couldn't make it. So I have a story about that.
Well, how many children did you have at that point?
Hmm?
How many children did you have at that point?
Well, at that point, we had two.
Hmm.
My son Jim and Bob.
And then where did you go?
Okay, so now I got a job managing a restaurant. And, in 1955, our good friend, whom had introduced me to Doris, originally she had been married and family, they were living on the coast of Oregon called Reedsport. They had a farm there. And he tried the restaurant business there. They opened up a cafe. And, well, they couldn't handle both, so they called us and said, why don't you take it over, you know. And so we went there and did that.
Oh.
We started a little restaurant business in Reedsport, Oregon. Met some nice people there. And then, meantime, before that, Tony Jr. was born, 1950. And then 1957, Mike was born in Reedsport, yeah. So I got four sons.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. So then did you stay in Reedsport or did you?
Well, no. The restaurant, we held it for 4 years. We made good money when we started. We worked like the devil because we opened 7 days a week, starting 5 a.m, 10 p.m.
Mm.
How long did that last? You know, we had to decide. We got to close. You have to. So anyway, then the industry there was lumber. The lumber industry went downhill because we used to depend on the small loggers, as they're called, but the big companies like Georgia Pacific and the other company, I forget, they put all these people out of business. And so the industry went flat, and we weren't making any money. I owed back rent, you know, and so we sold it. And we left there and went to Medford, Oregon. My brother-in-law lived there, Joyce's brother. And so we went there, and, well, jobs were very few. It's a small town, and we tried opening up a restaurant by leasing the restaurant area of the bar. That the fella didn't want to run the restaurant part, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did that. But I could see the handwriting on the wall. I talked to my brother Giovanni, who's in New York. And he said, Tony, why don't you come out here? He says, you know, they're paying $15 an hour for truck drivers. The union then, he was in. Well, you know, that sounded good with me, so. And so I decided, and we decided, we're going to have to go back to New York. We've got to raise four children here.
Uh-huh.
Meantime, my son Jim was a senior.
Well.
Yeah. And the others following up. So I took my youngest, Tony Jr. He was 10 years old. And I came to New York, and I lived with my sister's house. I had two sisters living in that area in Brooklyn by the Sunrise Highway out there.
Hmm.
So anyway, stayed with them, and I got a job. My brother made sure I got a job with the union driving, and so I started making a few dollars. And so I sent for, I said, give up that restaurant, you know, come on. And we moved back to New York.
Hmm.
My folks had moved in to Peekskill during the war. Bought a house, two family. And so from Brooklyn, that's where Mike was, Bob was born in Brooklyn. Yeah, you're born in Humboldt Street. Anyway, we just went up to move up to Peekskill, and I drove a laundry dry cleaning vehicle for Highland Laundry in Peekskill. Meantime, Doris was working as a waitress at the restaurant in Peekskill, the only one. And then my son went to work as a clerk there, my chip. And in the meantime, the young manager was going to go political. So I asked him about introducing to the owners, which was a group of people from New York, Long Island. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the most memorable men I ever met.
The most what?
The guy who represented the group that owned that motel. His name was Frank Whitman. What a beautiful man, mm-hmm. you know. And I said, let's have an interview for your job, because he was going to run for a political job in the town. Speak to him. I said, we'll all vote for you, you know, my whole family, and so forth. But he got it. And so he did introduce us, and Frank Whitman, and he interviewed. We got the job running this motel. That was 1963. And then from there, a lot of things went on. The New York Jets came to town there. That's the training ground. I met Joe Namath, the quarterback. You know, he came there. That's his first place. I met the owner, Sonny Werblin. And a lot of good came out of that. So we stayed there 20 years. Hmm. We gave our children a college education. And after 20 years, we decided to retire and come down here.
You came here. Uh-huh.
Lifestyle. Well, that's our life.
Yeah. Well, gee, is there anything we haven't talked about that you think would be important to mention about coming here as a child and living your life here?
You know what? When I got here, as a matter of fact, before I got here, we had we bought a motorhome. When we retired, before we retired, we bought it, and we did some traveling with it. So when I retired, yes, we did a lot of traveling with the motorhome. I went to Mexico, Canada. I went. We traveled all over, visiting our good friends back out west that we left. And we also have relatives in the state of Washington. My brother-in-law, he moved into Washington. And we did traveling. So I came down here with my motorhome because I had a nephew who lived in Spring Hill.
Oh.
And his name is Anthony Viola. Huh. So we visited him. And he was a single young man, and he worked for one of his best friend who owned the restaurant here. He graduated culinary art school, by the way, in upstate New York, one of the biggest ones there. And so we visited him, and we decided, well, let's look around here for our retirement, you know. And that's how we got here. And when I retired in New York, I stopped thinking, what the hell am I doing here? I wake up in the morning, I was 70. I said, so now what do I do when I wake up in the morning? So I took a job with the limousine company. I stopped driving limousine in New York, mm-hmm. in Yonkers, by the way. Running the airport and things like that. No. Then, of course, that got tired of that. And then, of course, then when we came down here, and it wasn't too long after that that Doris got very sick. And so, for the next 10 years, I had the job of taking care of her, you know. Mm-hmm. So this went on, and my sons at this time, now I'm getting to the age of 80, you know, and my son said, Dad, you're not going to be able to handle it with Mom. So he said, for me to put her in a rest home. I said, well, I said, no way. But 2 years later, I did. I had to. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it's been. But I'm playing golf. I play cards, I go to clubhouse here, you know, get involved with whatever activities we could get involved with. Mm-hmm. And I met my neighbor here, and we get together some, like we did. We went to Clubhouse New Year's Eve and nice. Had, you know, dinner, dance, whatever.
Yeah. So what are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward to playing more golf. But I do have traveled around the country. I drive.
Uh-huh.
I have visited my sons where they all live in different areas now. California, Kansas City, Long Island, Massachusetts, and I drive.
Great. And what, you must be what, 89?
Yes.
89.
Good I'm 89
you.
Now.
Good for you.
Going on 90.
4 months.
And I feel active.
Yeah.
But and take whatever comes. I'll still drive and visit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I may be planning a trip to West Coast this coming summer.
Great.
Or maybe a trip to Italy. Mm-hmm. Somebody had, one of my relatives, rich relatives. No? Yeah. Has offered to go ahead and sponsor me trip to Italy.
Italy. Oh, nice.
So that's what I, well, one or the other, we'll see.
Yeah. Would you say you achieved the American dream?
I would say so. As healthy as I am, and I rubbed elbows with all the big mafia boys and stayed away from them and mind my own business, you know. And come out of it, come out of the war, call me lucky.
Yeah. That's a perfect place to end. I want to thank you for a wonderful interview.
Thank you. As a matter of fact, the fellows I play golf with.
Yeah.
They have a, we've been together for 4 or 5 years. And some of the guys I play golf with when I first came here, 17, 18 years now, well, they're dying off. So they have a memorial stone at the golf course. And the fellow who runs says, well, what do you want me to put as an epitaph? I said, call me lucky. And that's what they're going to do.
Great, great.
And when that time comes, that's where it'll be. They'll find my tombstone on the golf course. Because I'll be cremated.
Right.
And I told my son, when you guys get my ashes, I want you to go around the golf course, put a little bit every hole.
Okay, well, I've been speaking with Anthony Viola, and it's January the 2nd, 2005, and this is Janet Levine for the National Park Service, and I'm signing off.